Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to American Conservative Radio. I am Tracy Coyle.
And I'm Bill Hinman.
Welcome to another example of conservative discussion in action. This evening we're going to do something we haven't done before. We're going to talk about specific positions that the American Conservative Party has taken and what maybe we should be talking about in the future. But I am going to discuss about the idea of why the positions are taken the way they are.
Okay.
There are some things that I want to read first, so put on your thinking caps, relax a little bit, and pay attention. Some of the stuff you're going to remember is going to ring familiar to you. But it's not the part that I want you to remember. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Everyone remembers that part. Everybody pays attention to that part. We'll quickly talk about that part. But I want you to pay attention to the next part. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying at its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Powerful words.
It is a fundamental point for me that we should have principles on which to lay the foundation of this party. We have done so. Those principles are there for everyone to read on the website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. I strongly recommend that you read them and you understand them, and that if you agree with them, to join the American Conservative Party, to join our attempt to retake government from those that have either forgotten this or ignore this. Because it seems to me that really, really smart people are not paying attention to this at all anymore. The bailouts that are being proposed, the number I heard today is frightening. Combined with the Fed, the U.S. Treasury, combined with the money that has actually been outlaid, money that has been promised, money that has been earmarked, money that is going to support or fund, the total so far is $7.7 trillion. That is more than half of our country's GDP annually. A number that is just absolutely ridiculous. Worse than ridiculous, it is fundamentally a crime. It is unconstitutional for the United States government to step into the private lives of businesses and rescue them, save them, keep them from falling. It's not government's purpose. It's not government's mandate. And I am absolutely beginning to have to worry about replacing the steering wheel on my car, because I was pounding it so much today that I think I cracked it. Somebody said, government has to do something. And all I can think of is Ronald Reagan riding off on his horse. That's what government should be doing. Getting the hell out of the way. Let the markets do what the markets do. Any damage that will be caused by too big to fail, failing, is going to be less in the long run than government trying to prevent it. I'm going to breathe here for a second, and I'm going to give you a couple seconds to join in, Bill.
Okay.
And I'm going to rant some more.
Okay. I agree with all of that. That government is best that governs least, and that was Thomas Jefferson. It seems to me that when government intrudes or imposes itself on capitalism, on business, on the very fabric of our lives, it has taken unto itself a task that, one, cannot be completed, and two, will be destructive of that. Anytime you give anybody, whether that be a government, that be another person, control over your life, you have abdicated your own responsibility to be yourself, to control your own destiny. So when we say we're going to, under the very first bailout, for instance, and this doesn't apply just to bailouts, this is about government intrusion into lives. But in the first case of the government bailouts, we were told, oh, we're going to buy up toxic assets. And then we were told, well, gosh, no, we aren't going to do that because it would take too long to implement. And so therefore, we're going to bail out the financial institutions. And we started with AIG, and then we went on to other large organizations, financial organizations, saying, well, if we just do this, that will cure the problem. Unfortunately, then we said, well, no, we aren't going to do that. What we're going to do is we're going to purchase preferred stock in, the latest example, Citigroup, all in order to say we want to keep the economy rolling. But I would submit to you that the only way to keep the economy rolling is to let it find its own equilibrium. If we do not do that, we're fighting it. If we fight it, we will fail, because that market is worldwide, and it is bigger than anything that the government can do, the federal government can do.
Well, let me tell you, the government has got very big printing presses.
Oh, it certainly does. And the end result of those printing presses is, one, hyperinflation, and two, a devaluation of the assets that they hope to control.
Which in this case happens to be the American economy.
Yes, it is. When you try to stabilize an economy that is bigger than anything else, any other economy on earth, you are doomed to failure. You cannot do it. That economy will stabilize itself. It will take time. There will be pain. But you know what? There always is. That economy goes up and down. There is no way that you forestall that you ameliorate that you get rid of that cycle. That economy will go up and down. There isn't anything you can do about that. You can throw money down a rat hole, but that isn't going to accomplish what it is that you hope to accomplish.
I started to write a post over the weekend. There was a fair amount of goings on behind the scenes, and I basically wanted to not necessarily address it, but I needed to clarify in my own head certain things, and it actually applies here, and I've left the post unpublished, and it's probably going to stay that way. But there is a part that I want to read to you.
Okay.
At my most basic level, I am a fiscal conservative.
Yep.
Not because I'm money-oriented, despite the degree from University of Illinois Chicago, you know, Bill Ayers' place.
Yeah, right.
Despite my degree in economics, but because I believe government is fundamentally ill-equipped, constitutionally prevented, and morally wrong to attempt to deal with issues outside of its limited role. Now, because most fiscal conservatives oppose government intervention in areas outside the constitutional mandate, we are often accused, wrongly, of being libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Our founding fathers considered government to be evil, unnecessary evil, but at its core, a vile creature that needed to be tightly controlled.
Yes.
If, in fact, government is evil, then any attempt to use it for good is corrupt. It would be as wrong as using a junkyard dog to guard your baby.
Yeah.
Simply the wrong tool at the wrong time for the wrong purpose.
Yep.
Now, this, what I wanted to go find, and let me tell you, I've had a hard time finding it. It's around, and it's a Jefferson quote, and it's, or maybe it's Madison. I don't, that's probably my problem. It may not have been a Jefferson quote, but it's along the general idea that we need to have moral people in this country. Society has to be populated by moral people because the government was not going to give people or enforce moral behavior on people.
Mm-hmm.
Not its job. We are to be moral so that we behave. That's the whole concept of personal responsibility, personal accountability, personal liberty. We have to be accountable to ourselves. We have to be responsible. We have to be moral people because government wasn't going to be that way. Now, in all the past, the monarch ruled, the dictator ruled, and that's where the morals came from. Whatever the king said, that's what happened. That's where if it was acceptable to the king, it was acceptable in society. And that's not acceptable to us in this country. Now, as taking all of this into consideration, okay, the idea of setting positions. Now, we as a party are trying to be very consistent with the Federalist type approach. States, rural states, and state party organizations deal with state issues. The National Party deals with federal issues, and those issues tend to be rather limited. That's a good thing, in my opinion.
I agree.
But we're not there. We can't just... Let's pretend Tracy is dictator Tracy, and I just took over the United States, and I'm going to make it the way it's supposed to. Okay? I cannot just go in there and wipe out every department, every council, every administrative office that doesn't belong in the federal government because it was never supposed to be there.
Right.
I can't. The disruption would be just unbelievable. However, that process has to start somewhere. It has to begin to move. And the question becomes, how do you do that? Where do you do that? And so what I tried to get somebody to understand this weekend, and it didn't work. Bear with me because this is tenuous as far as how I recall it. It is important for us to understand that the party must establish principles that we are going to be non-compromising about. We are going to support candidates that support those principles. Once that candidate gets into office and holds those principles, they are going to have to negotiate positions that are not going to be pure conservative principle positions. They can't be, because there's a whole lot of people in this country that are not conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And they have just as much right to decide how this country is going to be run as we do. And so those non-conservative politicians are going to have to negotiate with the conservative politicians, and we're going to end up with a position that is a final position that is going to be something different than the position we want as conservatives. This is okay. I accept that. I don't know how much everybody else does, but I accept that because I understand that if we start from the principled position, the results will be closer to what we want than if we start from an unprincipled position closer to some middle.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the goal that I want. I want us to understand that the positions we set are the goal. They are not the result we're going to get by those candidates that support us, simply because compromise is part of the political process.
Yes, it is.
All right. Now, we're getting there. 17 minutes, and it's going to take me another 10 to do this.
That's okay.
Here we go. This comes from Alexander Hamilton. Okay? So numerous indeed, and so powerful are the causes which serve to give a false basis to the judgment, that we, upon many occasions, see wise and good men on the wrong as well as on the right side of questions of the first magnitude to society. This circumstance, if duly attended to, would furnish a lesson of moderation to those who are ever so much persuaded of their being right in any controversy. Okay? I'm not telling you that moderation is important or that moderation is the goal. Moderation is the result of a conservative principled position having to be negotiated with an unprincipled, unconservative position. That may be the result, and we should accept that that is a result that's going to get us closer to where we want to go. Now, we have to keep the pressure on, have to keep making our principal position known, and continue to work at negotiating from that position so that we can pull closer and closer to our goal, what we want to do. I've tried to tell this to other people. They don't like this answer, this position a whole lot, but I understand that we are not the only people in this country, and we are not always going to be, no matter how right we are, it's not going to be the result, because there are other people out there.
Okay.
The last part of this that I want to get to actually comes from Madison at this point, out of the Federalist Papers. Let me get to the right place here. It may display the subtlety of the writer. It may open a boundless field for rhetoric and declamation. It may inflame the passions of the unthinking and may confirm the prejudice of the misthinking. But cool and candid people will at once reflect that the purest of human blessings must have a portion of alloy in them, that the choice must always be made, if not of the lesser evil, at least of the greater, not the perfect, good. Good, and that in every political institution, a power to advance the public happiness involves a discretion which may be misapplied and abused. They will see, therefore, that in all cases where power is to be conferred, the point first to be decided is whether such a power is necessary to the public good, as the next will be, in case of an affirmative decision, to guard as effectively as possible against a perversion of the power to the public detriment. We need to ask the first question, not whether a law is right or wrong, but whether a law should be considered at all. Our positions as a party should not be whether this position is right or this position is wrong, but whether a position should be taken at all. Our position may be that we don't want that function to be done at the national level. We may suggest that it's not even appropriate at the state level. But that's the arguments that I want us to have, is whether the position should be taken at all. If the answer is in the affirmative, then we need to be careful what we're trying to accomplish. The argument that I was having with the person was on taxes. Okay? I believe taxes are necessary.
Yes.
They should be as broadly distributed and fairly distributed as possible. But they need to be, we need to have them. Government has to have funds to work.
Yes.
So, taxes are important. Now the question is, how do we get a distribution of taxes? The place where the argument began was, well, if we started doing something with taxes to have a specific result, and I believe that that is the wrong approach towards taxes. And I do it, and a lot of other people do it. A lot of good people, good conservative people that believe in limited government, will take taxes as a method to force government and people to behave in a certain way.
Yeah, right.
That's not what taxes are for.
No. Taxes are to fund government and the necessary, but only the necessary functions of government.
Right. Somebody on the radio said, why don't we just give everybody $1 million and that'll take care of everything?
There you go.
Let me tell you, $1 million, I could do some pretty good with $1 million for me and my family.
Yep.
And I'm certain that pretty much every family could do the same thing. The only problem with that is the $11 trillion price tag.
Yep.
It's just a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, you know, it's a problem.
So somebody said, well, what about 100,000? And I said, okay, we're getting to a smaller number. But, you know, if it's a smaller number, then you can't do as much. So if you can't do everything you need to do, then 100,000 isn't enough. So
right.
We get back to the middle. So the idea is wrong because of that, not because the dollar amount is wrong. What is that old saying? Who said it? Somebody said, was it to Mae West? Somebody offered Mae West $1 million to spend the weekend with him, and Mae West said, "What kind of woman do you take me for?" And he said, "Well, you know, I take you for just that kind of woman. The question is not, you know, whether you're that kind of woman or not. The question is how much."
Right.
Once she suggested that the number was not appropriate, then it was just a question of how much, not what it was being done for.
Exactly.
That's the problem we have here. It's not a question of what the price tag is. The question is we shouldn't be discussing it at all.
Exactly.
That is our point with the bailouts. It's not a question of whether the bailouts are too much money or that we can't afford it or that it's going to cost us lots of taxes. Those are all just discussing the price.
Yep.
Okay. I'm not interested in discussing the price. It's the principle that's wrong to begin with. We
exactly.
shouldn't be discussing the principle.
Exactly.
All right. So, up on our website today, over the weekend, I did a lot of house cleaning on the weekend. And I put on our website directly the positions that have been discussed, voted on, debated, and that are currently part of the platform of the American Conservative Party. Now, I'm not
yep.
going to discuss them in detail because there's plenty of stuff up there for people to read, and I strongly recommend that you go and read not just the positions, go on to the platform segment of the site, read the discussions that went on underneath them, how those positions began, how they were formulated, the discussion that went on with that. I put them in a specific order that I'm going to stay with tonight. Okay. The first one is the global war on terror. Over the weekend, last week, they were announcing Victory in Iraq Day.
Yes.
As November 22nd. And I think probably it was based on a lot of things, but one of the things that declaration was based on was the reporting of one person. Michael Yon has been in Iraq on and off basically since the military went in.
Yes.
He's been an embed reporter with on-the-ground troops, I would suggest, 7 or 8 months of the year, every year, since 2003. And
yep.
he recently returned to Iraq, and after about a month of wandering around, his conclusion was, we won. It's over. It's just a matter of cleaning up, and it's a matter of making sure that it stays stable and that the foundations get well dug for the future of Iraq. But the battle for Iraq's life, democratic life, had been won.
Mm-hmm.
That the insurgency was basically broken, that it couldn't reconstitute itself at this point, and that the vast majority of Iraqis simply were having a normal life,
mm-hmm.
and that war had pretty much ceased to exist in vast areas of Iraq. Now, I don't know that I'm as willing to go with the idea that we won and, you know, things are going to be peachy keen over there for the next 10 years, and after 3 or 4 years of us, you know, we can get out of there and everything is just going to be fine. I think it's going to be bad there forever. It is the culture is corrupt, and I'm not saying that that's unique to Iraq. It appears to be anytime you have government, it appears to be corrupt, you know, no matter where it is. But in the Middle East, it seems to be institutionalized. Of course, given what's going on in China right now, it appears that it has nothing to do with the Middle East Arab nations or Islam. It may have something to do with the idea that, you know, there's a whole lot of poor people and a whole lot of rich people and a whole lot of people not existing in the middle.
Well, it also has to do with totalitarian types of regimes.
I think it's a long-term process where it just breeds into people that government is either going to abuse them or give them.
Yes.
You know, and it can switch pretty easily from one to the other, but there's not a whole lot of in between.
And it's amazing to me that more people don't realize that no, the government doesn't have to control them or give to them, but that it must be subservient to them.
I don't know if I can say this on the radio.
Yeah. you might not be able to. I don't know.
Well, I probably get away with saying it on Blog Talk Radio because it's not broadcast.
Yeah.
I'm not going to swear anybody. I'm not going to swear. It's not a swear word. It's not a bad word. But I was thinking about bumper stickers last night.
I like bumper stickers.
And I thought of one, and you're going to have to bear with me a second while I put it back into my head the right way so that I say it correctly the first time.
Okay.
It is Barack may be the president, but he's still just a servant.
Yes. As all presidents are.
I thought that some people would have an issue with that.
Probably will.
Good. You know me. I like issues.
Yes, you do.
I like stirring things up a little bit. Anyways, yes, you're right. Government is the servant. We are the master.
Exactly.
So,
Tracy, let me make a point here. That is not foreign to our conceptualizations. We routinely, absolutely routinely, I don't know anybody who disagrees that the military is subservient to the civilian leadership. Nobody disagrees with that. Everybody says, yes, that is how it has to be.
Who's the strongest opinion holders of that opinion?
The military.
The military.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You betcha.
When I was in the service, that
so
was
when
like,
did we get away from the concept of, if the military is subservient to the civilian leadership, that civilian leadership is subservient to the people of the United States of America?
When did that happen? I can tell you exactly when it happened.
When did that happen?
Tracy's profound thought.
Okay.
It happened the day after the Constitution was signed.
Or perhaps only that afternoon.
No, I think people celebrated first, and then they realized that there was power to be had there was things that government could do that no one else could do or would want to do. And on that day, it might have only been one or two people. It might have been a small community. But those people said, now that government is in place, we can go back to our daily lives.
I would remind you of the Benjamin Franklin quote. On the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, when a lady accosted Mr. Franklin on the streets and said, "What kind of government have we?" And he replied, "A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it."
And of course, just that.
So he was already thinking about that.
Right, and that's why I go back. As soon as somebody believed that they could relax and let government take care of it, that's when we believed that government was no longer subservient, that government had some authority. Other than what we gave it, you know, and when we abdicated those responsibilities to government, you know, it took upon itself that authority to act upon those responsibilities, as it would reasonably do. I mean, if a boss came up to me and said, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do, but you take care of that. I am going to, in the natural order of things, take some of his authority that he needs to accomplish that, because I need that authority to accomplish what he has set me to do.
Exactly.
So I have taken from him authority he may not have wanted to grant me, but I need in order to accomplish those things that he has assigned to me. And that's what we have done to government. We have given it responsibility to do things, and it has taken the authority necessary to do so. In the global war on terror, we have given up a certain amount of liberty.
Yes.
In order to increase the level of security.
Yes.
And I don't think there's anybody that disagrees that the wrong security has been given up. I don't feel more secure getting onto an airplane because they're making everybody take off their shoes.
No, me either. Or only having 3.5 ounces of hairspray or whatever.
Right. You know, because here's the kind, maybe I shouldn't say it. No, I'm not going to say that. That doesn't make me feel more secure. And it certainly is an infringement upon my person that they are doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, the right idea is here. We need, you know, our position, the party's position is, our national security is not just defense against threats, but protection of our borders and citizens.
Yes, absolutely. Specifically mentioned in the Constitution.
Right. So, we support, first of all, preemption. The party supports preemption.
Yes.
We have the authority, we have the right to protect ourselves from threats that could or could not be imminent, but which are real, and, you know, you cannot react to them. I'm sorry, saying, well, yes, after they launched the bomb at New York, then we can defend ourselves. You know, New York's not going to appreciate that a whole lot, not that it'll be around to be pissed off about the fact that it doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Okay, so we have the right to do something about that. All right. That's position one. It is this idea of giving up some of our security, the wrong kind of giving up, but it's this authority issue, the subservient issue. The second position we have in there is taxes. We've touched on this a little bit. I'm just going to say it again. The government needs funds to carry out those functions and the tasks assigned to it in the Constitution, and those taxes need to be fairly assessed. There's lots of nice little things about how we think that should happen. But the one place that I got a lot of argument from is the last sentence on there, the last two sentences of that, because the imposition of these changes would require significant planning and create disruption in the marketplace, we believe their immediate implementation is necessary. This idea that we have to, you can't roll in this tax plan. You know, December 31st, old plan out, January 1st, new plan in, done. Otherwise, mm-hmm. things get only half-assed done, as
yep.
it is normal for Congress to do. We're going to cut spending and raise taxes. Well, we can do the raise taxes now so the money starts flowing, and then the cutting spending never seems to follow. So
that's exactly right.
My argument's always been there. Now, taxes, security, these are things that are normal and part of the of what we believe that the federal government should be doing. The next position that we have on there is education. And doing one of those Scooby-Doo things. You know, what is education doing in the national platform?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, this is where I was in this discussion, the first part, the first half hour of this show. Okay? We can't just get rid of the bad parts of government so that only the good parts are left. The process has to be somewhat gradual. And in education, I didn't have any problem with No Child Left Behind in principle. The idea of establishing standards and then letting the states figure out how to hit those standards.
Mm-hmm.
A national standard I thought was a reasonable point of view. It got really screwed up in the implementation. And
As often happens.
Give government
yep.
half a chance and it's going to take only a quarter chance.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, and this was frankly not my idea. I had nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of rather interesting and I liked it a whole lot. The idea was to transform the Department of Education into an institute for educational and academic standards.
I think that was Jackie's idea. That was a great idea.
It might have been Jackie's idea. I liked
it. I loved it.
The new institution will publish standards for educational materials and academic teaching, but have no implementation, enforcement, or acceptance powers. This
yep.
is based on the idea of the Bureau of Standards.
Yes.
The Bureau of Standards establishes, it does lots of testing, it takes the best brains of academic and industry, and it puts them in a room, and it gives them all the tools necessary to test everything they need to do to come up with a standard.
Right.
And then that standard is published, and people can use it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, the people that don't use it are idiots.
Yep.
The people that do use it are smart. And this idea of taking the best and smartest business people, academicians, teachers, trainers, and establishing educational standards and then just publishing them
mm-hmm.
and letting states pick and choose. The smart
yep.
ones will take advantage of these standards. The stupid ones won't, and people will leave those states because they're stupid.
They will vote those stupid people out and put in smart ones.
And then you don't have... And the idea of having... You know, I agree that the idea that you should have community standards in certain areas. But I don't think education is one of them. And the reason I don't think... Educational standard, community standards were great when a person was born, lived, and died in a 5-mile
community.
Circle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, you know, pi r squared is pi r squared. It is never pi r cubed. I'm sorry,
right.
It doesn't work that way.
Right. You know,
yeah.
I have been in 39 states of this country and Canada.
Whoa.
I have not just flown over, but actually stood on the ground, picked up a rock, threw it into a field in 39 states.
Wow.
I have decided that I'm not interested in going to any other country until I've hit all 50.
Cool.
You know, now the only reason I actually have Canada is because I took a shortcut from Detroit to Niagara.
Ah.
Because I only had 6 hours, and I just cut straight across, and it was faster that way.
Mm-hmm. And, okay.
So rather than going the long way around, that's the only basic reason I was in Canada. We want to get rid of this No Child Left Behind, transition away from it, and we want states to have control over their educational process, but community standards, you know, that applies if the people in your community are never leaving that community, are never interacting with the rest of the country or the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And today, there is no such community in the United States.
Nope.
Not in Alaska, not in Maine, not in Montana, not anywhere.
Right.
So that's why I like this idea a whole lot, and it's a great way of getting government out, federal government, out of the educational process. I like it a lot. I think it's a great idea.
Yep, I like that one.
The only other position that we have directly up on the board right now is eminent domain, and this was a specific response to the Supreme Court's ruling in Kelo.
Mm-hmm.
What a god-awful piece of crap that is.
You know, every once in a while, the Supreme Court just simply gets it wrong.
You know, I want to say that wrong is one thing. This is a piece of crap.
Yeah.
How in the hell can you read the Constitution and think that it's okay to take private property for public for private purposes?
Exactly.
Come on, guys.
Goodness gracious me.
Okay, so the whole general idea of eminent domain is that there is no right by government to seize, even with compensation, private property for private use.
Right.
Period.
Right.
There might be some really good reasons to seize private property for public use with compensation.
Yep.
But there is zero reason for private taking of private property for private use. Just absolutely not. It's the one thing that I have a big problem with.
I mean, in my humble opinion, and for purposes of disclosure, I am not an attorney, have never wanted to be an attorney, but
I play one on the phone all the time.
Kelo ranks right up there with the worst of the decisions that the Supreme Court has made. I'm just without any doubt in my mind.
I had a friend, a blogger friend, that was really stayed on top of it extensively while it was going on. And, you know, he became one of those jumping up and down, waving hands, marching across the street, fanatics yelling and screaming that the end of the world is coming because of this Supreme Court decision that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I had already come to that position with the Bankruptcy Reform Act.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought I was a little crazy, but not too crazy about it. He didn't think it was such a good idea either, but when Kelo came in, he just went off the deep end too and went, this is nuts. This is crazy.
Right.
How the heck could you come to this conclusion? It's just wrong. You know, and most people don't understand this, you know, and somebody else has written about it over the weekend. You might be able to find it somewhere there. You know, the Constitution was written for the average citizen, Now, I will suggest to you that the average citizen in 1787 was considerably smarter than the average citizen of 1999 or 2008.
Or at least better educated.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah.
So I just pissed off, you know, 60% of the population by calling
them. Yeah, oh, well.
Well, actually, the number is closer to 52.4% of the rest of the population are idiots.
Yeah.
Okay. So, he gets, you know, that is, the Constitution was written for the average person to be able to understand.
Yes.
And the average person should be able to look at why the Supreme Court has made a decision and why government has made a decision, and the average person should be able to say, that is wrong, or that is right, that is consistent with the Constitution. It shouldn't require 4 years of college, 3 years of law school, 2 years of constitutional, you know, involvement to be able to understand the first paragraph. You know, it shouldn't take 35 years of being a senator before you find out exactly what the vice president should be doing.
You at least ought to be able to correctly name the order of the articles and all that kind of stuff, and what they pertain to.
So, you know, I realize that the average person can get elected president of the United States. I just wish we had actually elected the average person. You know, it would have been a lot better.
Oh, it would.
In any case, that's the idea. Eminent domain, our position on eminent domain was specifically because the Supreme Court had screwed up. Now, we have 9 minutes roughly left.
All right.
Hey. So we've got all the way to this point, and where am I?
I don't know where you are, but I think it would be important to note that the Constitution was written to limit government, not to expand it. I mean, the words and the intent are very, very clear. And it was instructive to me to know, one, that was true, and to realize that President-elect Obama considers it, one, to be a flawed document, and two, that there needs to be, and I'm going to mangle the quote, so this is not a direct quote, but there needs to be a new Bill of Rights that gives things rather than denies things. And to me, that was the most horrible example that he could have used. It was just, from my point of view, that was a very gross misreading of what it was that the founding fathers of this country put in place. I was most dismayed.
But he's getting support on our side of the aisle because too many people think that the Constitution is a source of our rights.
Exactly. And my God, what a gross misreading of that document that is.
So, you know, it's not just his fault, it is part of that abdication of responsibilities that, you know, government, you take care of it. I can't be bothered.
Yep.
I'm not interested. And
did you happen to see the Zogby poll? I believe it was Zogby.
512 idiots that couldn't tell this, that, or the other thing.
Well, and the part that really distressed me was that 55% of the people that were polled were college graduates. And quite frankly, they did worse than blind random chance on the answers. And these were like really basic questions. How many branches of government are there? Well, there's three: the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. Less than 30% got that right. I mean, what a travesty. What in the world are our schools teaching?
Well, you know,
that a college graduate doesn't know that answer.
Yeah, and if you've paid attention to, you know, every year they come out with history and geography questions, you know, that the average college student can't answer. And I don't like watching that TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah, yeah.
Because apparently most people are not.
Apparently.
Apparently. And, you know, I know that they actually try to find people that are, who believe they're pretty smart to show them how stupid they are, but, and there are places where I notice that I have my own little gaps of knowledge when I'm dealing with CJ's homework.
Yep.
But, you know, there are certain things that should be in there. I read a book a long time ago with something that I really enjoyed and thought it was really important to do. By, I can't remember his first name. Is it Edmund Hirsch? Cultural literacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that we have lost track of.
Yep.
Our educational system is no longer interested in teaching facts. I don't know why it thinks that that's an appropriate, you know, divergence, but it's not. But I have said for a long time, long before I became involved with ACP, long before I had a blog, long before I even became a Republican and then quit, you know, I went back to probably 16 or 17 and said, for every right, there is a responsibility.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, if somebody says, I have a right, the first thing that's going to come out of my mouth is, what is your responsibility associated with that right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, most people don't have a clue what the hell I'm talking about.
Nope.
But it is important that if you are going to have the right to vote, you are going to have the responsibility to do so intelligently, being informed upon the issues and the people involved.
And, you know, that is so much easier now than it was 40 years ago. I mean, 40 years ago, what did you have? You had television, you had radio, you had newsprint. That was it. You did not have the bloggers. You didn't have all of these people that look at the issues that are inherent in any campaign and say, here's my read on it. And it doesn't matter what blogger you read. If you go from the left side to the right side, you're going to get the arguments on both, and if you think, you can make up your own mind. But the purpose of that is you have to educate yourself, because you aren't going to get it from the 30-second soundbite that the candidates use. That is no longer a valid source of information. You have to dig a whole lot deeper than that.
We've got about a little over a minute left, and I'm going to say the following things. We've been talking about the basis of positions and some of the positions of the ACP. I am encouraging you and everyone else listening to present ideas of what other positions the American Conservative Party at the national level should consider, should be paying attention to. Because I think at this point, this is what we need to be focusing in on at the national level. At the state level, they're building organizations, but at the national level, we should be talking about positions.
Yes.
Bill, we have 35 seconds left. I'm going to do this on air. I'm going to say, Bill, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope you can spend it with good family, good food, good drink, good times. I'm leaving tomorrow, and I will be visiting my parents over the weekend. I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.
And let me add to that and hope that your Thanksgiving is as wonderful as it ought to be. We truly have a lot of things to be thankful for, not the least of which is the founding documents of our country and the people who put that in place.
Time's up.
I wish you all the well.
Time's up. Thanks,
okay,
Bill.
Okay, T. Bye-bye.
Bye.